Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, it's now or never, and if we're going to begin to turn this ship around, we have to get constitutionalists into office. I've had several conversations. I can't tell you how many, but I've had several conversations in the past few weeks, and especially the past few days, about really, if you're planning on actually succeeding, your key to success in unseating, let's just look at the real problem. In a representative government, our representatives are the real problem. Because bottom line, if our representatives are not doing what they're supposed to do, and they're actually exceeding their powers and authority, then we've got to replace them. We've got to get rid of them, and especially when they ignore us. And these petitions that we're driving will actually prove this. So what do you do? Okay, well, we prove that these people they're not worthy, and they're not worth your vote and not worthy to be in office, right? So what do you do? Well, folks, if you ask me, it's kind of simple. You can't just throw these guys out of office and then throw the next guy into office last minute. That guy's going to turn into the same thing as what you got rid of. Remember that old Who song, "Meet the New Boss, Same as the Old Boss"? That's because that person that you threw into office does not understand clearly the expectations. Not to do what you tell them to do, but we need to peel back what we want as far as these little issues and these little pet peeves and these projects that we want. We have to peel that back. If you're not willing to give up what government is willing to take to give you, because they have to take it from someone to give it to you, and actually get them back into the framework of the Constitution. See, reality, folks, what are you getting from government that you kind of like? Because bottom line, that thing that you're getting is unconstitutional, especially if it's coming from the federal government. The federal government has no power to give you anything, nothing. And if you're getting something from them, are you willing to give it up? Are you willing to say, you know what? This is destroying us. Because how hypocritical is it for you to say, I won't give this up, but you got to give that up? Folks, we all got to give it up. We got to give up everything that the federal government is giving us. Now, when it comes to Social Security and some of these things, specifically Social Security, that does not have to necessarily be given up. That can be transitioned, but it has to be ended and it has to be actualized. And what that means is you just have to get your arms around what we really owe those people who we lied to all these years. And everybody else that's been lied to all these years regarding especially Social Security. But when it comes down to a lot of these other, you know, I'll just say these social engineering projects, whether that be welfare or what have you, those things need to go back to the appropriate institutions that can administer them best. And I'm going to tell you, government is not the appropriate institution. Government is the appropriate institution when it comes to war, fighting war, ending war. But when it comes to, you know, taking care of, educating, providing health care, those types of things, then government is the worst, literally, the worst institution out there. I mean, they kill the best. When it comes to competition, nobody can kill better than government. And history proves this. It is not in the best interest of a business or corporation or even an individual to go around killing people. One, you'll either find yourself in jail or you'll be destroyed. But governments, they kind of get away with it, don't they? Well, anyway, so we got to stop throwing these new guys in, especially into office. So if you don't have a person right now then you better start fighting. And if you can find somebody that you can penetrate and get them in, because bottom line, see what's happening. I've done this for a couple of cycles now in working in Wyoming and a few other states, and having tried to reach out and tried to actually penetrate the brain housing group of these different candidates and then becoming politicians, 9 times out of 10, they don't understand really what they need to do. They don't. And it doesn't take long to get them there. But while they're out there fighting to get elected, it's not reasonable to think that they're going to understand. It's not reasonable to think they're going to actually absorb what they need to do, because they're just out there saying things to get them voted, you know, to get votes and get them voted into office. And they believe that some of those things that they campaign on, those promises, they have to deliver. Well, no. Not if those promises are violations of the Constitution. And so this is the danger we have in throwing new guys in, and this is how they become equally corrupt. So we really have to start drawing the line, and we really have to start planning. You've got to understand that the key to success is having the right people in office. Getting the right people in office isn't somebody just being thrown in there. You have to basically identify, you find people that are, one, willing to do this and willing to actually take this on. Maybe, you know, if it's a husband and wife, and the husband is working and providing for the family, and, you know, she could actually, you know, get into office, or vice versa. That way, you actually then have time to develop and nurture them so that they understand. And so what we're trying to do with these petitions is to help develop and nurture politicians. Because as people get involved in understanding these petitions, have you downloaded it yet? Have you looked at it? Have you printed out the petition? It's right there on the petition page. And what we're going to do is we're going to create this constitutional county page. And that's where we're going to start dropping all of these petitions for your constitutional county. Because this is where we believe it's the most appropriate, is to have a separate page. What we want to focus that the petitions page is really the main petitions that are in the court system that Bob Schultz is pushing and so forth. This way we can kind of separate this. And so we'll probably have a little flag, constitutional counties petitions within parentheses. That way, and it'll be up, and the petitions page will kind of lower down, because we want the historical context there for all these different lawsuits, so you can, you know, still stay aware of these things and what's going on. But more importantly, we want to have a central place where you'll be able to just go and actually start downloading. Now, you'll notice that all of these things are going to be basically, you know, reading as Benton County, Missouri, because that's where Paul Venable is running for his office for the Senate for Missouri. And so since most of these are being initiated and or we're, you know, creating for his campaign to actually be rolling out across the United States, what we want you to do is we want you to understand, grab these petitions and then change these out. And there's a little note there. If you need a little help, just let me know. We'll give you the Word document. We'll send you the Word document so you can put in your own county, your own state, and be done. Because that's all you have to do. That is it. And so you'll also notice that there's a naming convention, UMCC, and it is the Unorganized Militia for the Constitutional County, and then you can put in your own county name, or and so forth and so on. So anyway, what we want you to do is we want you to understand, and we want you to start using these petitions, because these petitions will educate you. As we write these things out, these things actually provide you some citations and support information regarding the Constitution, these rights, these violations, and so forth, and what has to be done. That's how we educate people, because as we start creating this long list of violations, and we've just begun, folks. We have literally just begun. We're going to be giving you everything you need to move forward. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to get right into these campaigns. Looking over my shoulder, I've got barely 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes. So, as you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And you can tell that I'm really hyped up. So when I'm hyped up, I start making mistakes, and you hear that as well. Anyway, Constitution Education US is a great source for your organization to be able to provide little snippets and information regarding the Constitution in training and helping people understand. Now, the Radio Dust Covers is another great product in covering your valuables that you may have out there that, you know, are worth protecting from the dust and other elements. Check out Stan Kluett at RadioDustCovers.com if you have anything that you want to protect. Our comment line, 425-270-5416. Just remember, folks, you have to have a good person. They got to be electable. I mean, it's nice to have, you know, some, you know, attractive, you know, vibrant candidate that, you know, people just kind of, you know, ooh, ah, you know, I really, because it's been proven. Eye appeal is buy appeal. But what's more important is, I believe, character, substance, and those types of things. And really, when it comes down to it, I believe people will actually vote for the person that is, especially in times of need. I mean, when things are going good, we usually will just vote blindly for, you know, that good-looking candidate. However, we actually, when we're fighting and when things are on the line, people really pay far more attention to the issues than they do, you know, the cosmetics. And so we want you to understand that having somebody that can actually speak the issues and understand the Constitution is critical, because that is what they're legally obligated to support, not our little pet peeve projects. Anyway, we will be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so yesterday we were going into citizenship, and we're kind of plugging along. This Bill of Rights thing is now 24 pages. And as I look at some of the stuff that we're heading into, because right now we're doing citizenship, we're going to be getting into the defining the equal footing and state sovereignty portions. We're getting into invasion, insurrection, and some of these things are literally clarities and so forth. And so one of the things that before I go too much further, I kind of want you to understand why common law is so important. See, the origins of common law was to establish these principles, precedents, based on the fundamental laws. So when Moses took the Egyptians or the Israel out of Egypt and out into the desert, he basically created a system of law where judges and so forth, he gave the people God's law. And so it was a theocracy. Literally, he set up a theocracy. However, instead of being the single sovereign potent like Muhammad in managing the people, because he wasn't all-knowing like Muhammad wasn't all-knowing. And so, I mean, when you look at Christ, I mean, you touched Christ and you were healed. And Christ knew that. And so if you start looking at the comparison, because if you've ever studied anything regarding Muhammad, Christ, Moses, and all these different, you know, supposedly prophets and Christian leaders, I mean, there is none other than Christ. I mean, when it comes to what he did and, you know, everything he preached, even Muhammad said that if he was with Christ, he would hold him up on his shoulders so that Christ would never have to soil his feet walking on the ground. I mean, Muhammad looked at that in his early days. He looked at Christ in that view. And so back to Moses. So Moses was basically creating this system of a distributive system, which was kind of like what the framers were trying to do with. And as a matter of fact, if you go look at the first seal of the United States that Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams submitted to the Continental Congress, it didn't become the seal, but it was their idea. On one side of the seal, it was the two Saxon brothers, and on the other side was a image of Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. And so they kind of looked at and they spoke about creating a distributive system where the majority of all the laws and majority of all the conflicts between the people would be settled at the local level, that most all jurisdiction and being able to deal with everything would be done at that level. Now, if they couldn't or if they needed to appeal, then it would go up to the next level. And then if they needed to appeal, it would go up to the next level. This way, it would get resolved one way or the other by a magistrate. Now, in this particular case, they used magistrates. And they started actually using not just magistrates, but if I remember correctly from talking to Brent Winters, and I'll bring this up with Paul Malley, that the people, when it came down to trying to create an understanding, let's say there was an issue that came up, and the consensus was, or the thought was, that this was a violation of the law. And I'm not going to give you an example. It was just something subjected to the judge. And the judge really didn't know. And so it would basically go to the people, and scholars would basically bring in the scriptures and, you know, all of the facts, so that then the people, like a trial by jury type of thing, would make, you know, if you want to call it a declaration or definitize whether that was the law or whether it wasn't. And then it would go from there. It could be appealed. But when you came to common law, grand juries, and those types of things, it was a system that grew and grew and grew. Now, one of the things that what they wanted to do was they wanted to make sure that they were always in obedience to the law and the greater laws. And so when we look at our government, why did I go down this path? This is why. When we look at our government today, and we look at what they're doing today, sometimes it really requires a dive into the facts and into the issues. And we're going to cover some of those things today. But what we want to do, because we're going to cover the petitions for ex post facto, and actually we're not going to cover the petitions for those because I'm still kind of working on them. But the most important part of the ex post facto and the bills of attainder and punishment is so that we understand, and then we need to definitize these things. Okay? Definitizing means that we really need the people. We need like a common law grand jury to actually sit down and start determining what in today's world are bills of attainder and punishment. I'm going to give you some examples of that. When we look at our representative government, when we look at, you know, all, I'll call them stakeholders. I know that really is a hot button with a lot of people. But, you know, plank owners, you know, shareholders, whatever you want to call, those people have vested interest in the right thing, in ensuring that we're moving forward on the laws and on the facts and not being fooled and duped into doing things that we shouldn't be doing. That we need to maintain our course that is well-footed and grounded in the Constitution and the laws of nature and nature's God. So how do we do that? Well, sometimes we have to have that collective, you know, look so that it can be argued amongst the forum, and if you want to call them scholars, wise men, or what have you, and based on the laws and everything else, and actually, so this is where I honestly see, are we doing justice when we allow one grand jury to definitize and declare something? I think it's best to actually have a broad scope consensus where you have a multitude of different grand juries, and let's see how often they come up with the exact same verdict or the exact same declaration. When we look at the ratification debates, it wasn't until Massachusetts came along where Massachusetts had a grander view in ratifying the Constitution. And everybody followed Massachusetts, basically, you know, direction in what they did because it was that brilliant. My point is that Massachusetts wasn't the first. There were several states that actually ratified the Constitution prior to Massachusetts. And so all of a sudden, I'm thinking that those other states had ratified, but they go, you know, I kind of wish we did ours like that. Or, you know, had they gone first, then we would have been able to follow that. Because what they did was they provided what they would recommend as amendments to the Constitution along with their ratification. In other words, they ratified it. They didn't stipulate that they were ratifying it because, you know, only if you pass these things, because that's what many of the other states did. Virginia tried to do that, I should say. They tried to do that. They wanted to do that. They wanted to say, we'll ratify this if you'll do these things. In other words, kind of extort and say, we think you need us, and we'll do this if you give us these things and take away those things. Anyway, so long story short, when we're looking at common law, which is the fundamental legal system in the United States, in every state, then we need to start applying those types of principles in government as much as we possibly can. And when we look at that, it's truly a Republican form. So when we actually have these grand juries and what have you, I honestly think, or when we have this type of discussion in creating a basis of law or whether something is law or not law or to be law, in definitizing the Constitution and so forth, it's my recommendation. I loved what the framers did. They would actually have a local election and they would dictate who would be their local representatives to go and debate that particular issue or get involved in that grand jury. Instead of having an administrator going out and selecting people, I like the idea of having people campaign to say, send me, this is an important thing, and this is how I will represent you. This way, the people actually send, and I do understand that you have a lot of nefarious people that will do nefarious things, but it's better to give the people the choice as well as the sovereigns. Let's look at American republicanism. I know a lot of people have a hard time understanding American republicanism. American republicanism is basically a government that is just like all other republican forms of government, except our government is a government where the representatives are the sovereigns. which means that the people are representatives, and the government that the people have created at their level are sovereigns as well, and so they get representation, or they choose their own representation. So the county, having some level of sovereignty, having some responsibilities that the people have delegated to them, they should have representation in the state government. And at the state level, when we have sent our representatives in the House of Representatives and the counties have their representatives in the Senate, well, at the state level and up, we, the people in Congress, have a right to have representation in that House and in the other side of the bicameral legislative body. The sovereigns would be the states, and they would choose their representatives. So in other words, the sovereigns choose who their representatives are. So when we start looking at common law and we start looking at, you know, moving forward, it's kind of nice to understand that at least we have some say in these things, but I think it's better. I think it's better to actually have say in who is going to be discussing this for those people, because some of these decisions, the ramifications could be very big. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so having, I know we kind of moved forward on the citizenship because I didn't have petitions and so forth. And as I was looking at petitions for the ex post facto laws and bills of attainder and punishment, because that's what we covered in our last episode, well, what we want to do is let's explore, you know, what these petitions really need to start looking like. And I want to give you a few examples. But before we dive into the examples, I really think it's important because we've defined exactly what a bill of attainder and punishment is. A bill of attainder and punishment is when legislative bodies basically become judge, jury, and executioner. In other words, they pass a crime. They pass a law that creates a crime that will instantly punish you. So if that's the case, and we look at what do we see as punishment, right? You know, causing harm, throwing you in jail, that could be a punishment. Or coming in and saying, fining you and saying you have to pay. Well, if they call it a tax, then it's a tax that is distributed for everybody. And so I'm going to give you an example of how I believe in our world today, what would be a perfect example of a bill of attainder. Because I was just having this conversation with a patriot in Livingston, Montana. And a couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation with a patriot in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I kind of want to play both sides of this, because as we understand and as we've seen government becomes very tyrannical, especially if they start assuming powers that's never delegated. Now, have you ever heard of a government that has the authority to basically annex? And so, Hitler was definitely a guy that believed in annexing, because he annexed a lot of nations that became Germany, right? And when we look at that, well, that's not good. But when we look at America, we actually see cities and towns and so forth trying to annex properties next to them to say, we need to increase our tax base. And, there was a developer that created this large development outside our city. And even though, they're paying for our water and they're paying the rates for our water, but we want to be able to pull them into the city so we can increase our taxes, because then they would fall under our property taxes. Well, you know, folks, there was a reason why they built those homes outside of the city to keep their taxes down. Is it not a punishment when all of a sudden they, get pulled into a city, when the city says, we want to consume you? The city council says, we need to grow our tax revenues because we're spending too much money. In other words, there's all sorts of things that drive all of this. But where in the heck do they have the authority to just be able to annex? And what I would do, and I would pose this to you, let's say there's a small town that's just outside the capital of your state. In Montana, that would be Helena. And so let's say there's this small town, and let's just say, it happens to be, Ritzville, or I'm going to use Ritzville because that just came to mind. And so Ritzville is just outside of Helena. And so Ritzville all of a sudden takes it upon themselves to say, we're going to annex Helena. Well, if the principles of annexing is acceptable, then any city can do that. And any group of people can then say, we're now annexing you, and now you have to pay our taxes, and we've just taken over. Well, hold on. You got this bigger city. Is this really becomes a conflict? Or the question is, do they really have that kind of constitutional authority to be able to do those things, to grab people and say, you're now ours, you're now a citizen of our city? Well, hold on, folks. I don't think they have that power. And I'm telling you right now, I know they don't have that power, because it flies in the face of, this common sense logic and reason, where people can't be compelled. And as a matter of fact, as the city council makes a decision to say, we're going to move you into our city, it's not like that, it's no big transition. In other words, you're going to be eligible for our, law enforcement, and we're only going to assess you the same taxes. If that was the case, then I think that would be reasonable to present to the people in the area you want to annex, and you should have them vote. Because bottom line, the city should be able to withhold fire services, law enforcement services. The problem is, in most of these rural areas, law enforcement is usually done by the sheriff, and the sheriff kind of takes care of all of the towns and cities. And this, the city happens to pay out of its tax base for a, if you want to call it a dispatch and a area where the police, operate out of the, police center, police building. But it'd be for the sheriff. And when we look at the fact that, the city feels, hey, sheriff, you're servicing these communities just outside our city limits, and that means that you're using our money. And so I think it would be well within the city to say, okay, we're not going to be providing you any services. When you need services from the sheriff, you'll have to call, and they'll have to provide a dispatch from the rural areas wherever they're set up, because you know as well as I do, they won't be set up close to you, because the sheriff in his grand wisdom said, we're going to operate out of here. Now, if the sheriff wants to actually expand his ability to support out of there to take care of areas outside that city, then he can actually provide separate funding to make sure that that can be done, because that would be the most efficient way. So it'd be unreasonable for the city to, you know, make it so you can't operate. It's just that they can't flip the full bill. So they may actually have like a county building within the city or a portion of that building and, you know, garage and everything else to support the county operations and the city operations. So anyway, the point is that there's I can't see any way whatsoever that towns could actually annex and thrust themselves upon people. I can't see how that is within any constitution. And if it is, then this is another reason, folks, why you have to reel in. Because go into your state constitution, and if it basically says that the divvying up of land is, you know, held by the state legislatures, that they have that authority, I mean, you really have to go through your constitution to see if your state legislature, because 9 times out of 10, they're assuming these responsibilities because the federal government has come into land management and said, we have to manage all the land, and this is how we're going to do it. And so there are huge overreaches when we see this. Now, with Atlanta, there happens to be an upscale community that wants to peel away from Atlanta. And they're basically, you know, going through, and I think Atlanta's doing everything they can to say, you can't divorce yourself from us. Well, I can't understand why it wouldn't be reasonable, because if all of a sudden you're paying the taxes, but you're not getting the services, or you believe that you would be served better by getting away from a city, it should be no problem. It shouldn't be a problem at all. But this only shows the greed and avarice that actually starts growing within government. I mean, let people come, let people go. If a neighborhood or a rural area or a suburb chooses to come in and say, you know what, we'll try this, and if we don't like it, then we'll secede. But having these one-way deals and having these, you know, you don't have an alternative because we're a bigger, more powerful government than you, that's not acceptable. That's reprehensible in American form of government. So the question is, what we need to do is, how do we figure out if that's considered a bill of attainder or punishment? Well, in Livingston's case, what they've been trying to do is they're trying to pull these people in, and then as soon as they pull them in, they're going to basically hit these houses with these assessments that say you have to pay $30,000 or whatever it is to connect your house, because all of these houses are on septic tanks, and they want to put everybody onto their sewage system. And in other words, they're going to force you to do that. Well, hold on here. They can't do that because when they bought those houses, though, it was completely legitimate that they had well water. It was completely legitimate that they had, you know, their own septic systems and so forth. Now, just because the city wants to come along and say, you know, we want to make you part of the city and, you know, just add the taxes and services to that, but to force you into paying for utilities and services because they're just trying to grow their revenue? Folks, you understand that this is tyranny. And so when you have to hit somebody with that type of fee just because you've now annexed them, then that is a punishment. They may not be going to jail, but slapping them with a financial assessment like that just because you've annexed them? This is tyranny by legislation. And I believe that we need to kind of peel back the old terminology of bills of attainder and punishment and understand the principles that legislators or people in legislative positions, whether it be city councils, county councils, or what have you, when they start exercising some authority that actually has adverse effects, like taking away your water rights, they shouldn't have that authority. They should not be able to have that authority. Because what they've done, if you happen to own land and you haven't developed it, and your plan was to put a well on that, and then they take away your water rights and say you can't have a well, what they've done is they've basically rendered your property useless. And you have to abandon it. That is antithetical to what government should be able to do. I mean, it's one thing that government basically becomes a partner in helping you, but it's another thing when they become an enemy in taking things from you. And so this goes back to the same thing with property taxes. You should never lose your home because of government. We'll be right back after these two promos.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so really, when we start looking at, and this is kind of why I started talking about common law, in keeping with common law and the principles of a American Republican form of government, understanding common law is based upon the well-established law and precedents that the people have agreed upon and or, you know, that's built upon God's law. And, you know, sometimes we, you know, may get it wrong. As a matter of fact, some of the things in the Constitution, some of the things that they had and done were, you know, maybe not necessarily the best. And we've come a long way, but we've gone completely backwards over the past 100 years by injecting civil law, which means that the governors, or I should say those who govern, can dictate what they want to us. No. So understanding, and this is, I think, what helps people when we really start, because I talk about we the people, we're not a democracy, we're a representative government. And so for us to actually implement common law, we actually do need to look at creating, these, I'll say grand juries, but instead of these appointments and so forth that the governors or those who govern choose or an administrator, what have you, I believe, because this is how the framers did it. Anything and everything. When it came to lunch for the convention, the convention in ratifying the Constitution, there's no doubt in my mind when they wanted to talk about what they were going to have for lunch or sustenance while they were convening, because they didn't take a break. They didn't go out to, Subway and because that didn't exist. So they had to feed themselves. And so there was probably, a small group of delegates that they chose to make sure that, the lunch order was in for what everybody needed. And it was probably just a cup of soup and bread or something like that. I mean, it was probably very, very simple. But my point is that almost every decision they made through delegates. they didn't get themselves caught up in making every decision for themselves and for the, you know, that the people, because that's a democracy when the people have to make every decision regarding their government. So what we need to do is we need to start peeling back a little bit, and this is why I'm injecting this into these petitions. I believe these petitions will state something to the effect that we need to have conventions to actually, you know, and a multitude of conventions at local levels. And I think it starts at the county level where we actually create, I think, the basic dialogue and then move it to the state level, to a state convention of the delegates of the delegates. In other words, as we clearly delineate how to get our arms around, you know, reestablishing common law, and doing it in, you know, in the way it was designed, and reestablishing this republican form of government that the framers were inspired by the divine hand of providence, and restoring these things, going through a lot of these issues, such as bills of attainder and ex post facto laws, they need to be clarified even further so that we can apply them to today. Because back then, government didn't do and didn't have the shenanigans that they're doing today. And I think a big part of the responsibility, a big onus that these delegates will have, is determining what, you know, what needs to be done in removing civil law, in removing this arbitrary power that are those who govern us have tried to develop for themselves. So we have, again, I don't necessarily have these petitions, but I'm kind of giving you the idea of what this petition is doing. And so we've really created a color code. You don't see it and you don't know, but what, how I'm keeping track is I'm highlighting these things in red. This petition and the petition for ex post facto laws, those are red, as well as when we start getting into some of these other petitions where it is more essential to definitize via delegates at the county level. And so what we want to do is we want you to understand what the intent and what the meaning back in the times of the framers, what ex post facto, what these bills of attainder. I will tell you today, they do not, the way the government, the way the court looks at them today, they don't honor them the same way. This is why we have to go through this process of purging what the magistrates have deemed what they want to interpret it as. You know what? That's not how it's supposed to work. They don't get to redefine things. When it comes down to if there is a question, then the stakeholders, or I should say the share owners, shareholders, they're the ones that need to decide how to definitize and define that. Now, when it comes to the federal government, ultimately it would come down to the states and the state delegates. So when we look at, and when you kind of look at, if you've ever been involved in the party process where there's a convention at the county level, and then the next convention would be at the state level, then the next convention, I'm using the word convention because this is a process where all these people kind of get together and they kind of define things and so forth. We're not talking about a constitutional convention. We're talking about like a grand jury or a constitutional, or I should say a county convention, instead of calling it a grand jury, and actually looking at the face of these laws, defining them, and it has been done by elected delegates, like a convention, but not writing the Constitution, declaring and clarifying specific things within the Constitution. Then it goes up to the state. And then when the states basically have this pot of this is how, and why are they doing this? They're doing this because the federal government has already redefined and perverted what these things mean. And I think it's paramount that the states actually, you know, get together, but they have to start at the ground level. They have to start at the counties and work their way through. We do not want our states to actually send delegates out. And folks, that it's kind of like the same thing of the convention of states. We don't even want that to occur because we do not want to even open up the Constitution. But even worse yet, we don't want the state legislatures to make these assessments. As a matter of fact, we're going to add the convention of states and a petition for that so that we can remove the ability for a convention of states to actually occur. So every state needs to create a law or actually an amendment to their constitution that requires the counties convene a convention to determine whether they need a constitutional convention or not. And then it would require 3/4 of the counties to actually convene or basically go to the state and say, 3/4 of the counties believe that we need to have this, or at least 2/3, not a simple majority. Let's just stick with 2/3. If you get 2/3 of the county to appeal to the state to say, we need a constitutional convention, why? Because the counties have to do this in convention. In other words, and we're not talking about party convention. We're talking about the counties actually need to flip the bill and having people run, you know, out of so many precincts, you have to have at least so many people voted for to represent each of these precincts. And it has to be full quorum. So my point is, this is how we shut these things down. This is how we shut lobbyists from coming into your state legislature saying, we want you to just do these things. Why? Because we want to pull that power back to the state or back to the county from the states. This way, there's a check on the state government. The counties need to make sure that they don't get, you know, thrown to the wolves because the state government is being ran by the population center like Chicago. So, and this is how we actually take back the Senate out of the state government so that, you know, they don't actually have apportionment, which is all perverted. There's so many different things, such as, you know, the bicameral legislative makeup and apportionment and all of these types of things that we're going to be getting into. As a matter of fact, apportionment is next. So when we start going through many of these issues will lend to the need for the counties to create conventions to actually go through and delineate these things. And as a matter of fact, one of those things that actually needs to be done at the county as well is that the counties need to create their own constitutions. That means that the county commissioners are subject to significant changes in what their powers are and what is going to be asked of them, how many of them are going to exist, and so forth. The whole construction of the counties is subject to change. But it should be that way because it has never been done since, you know, the founding of this nation. Even though we've delegated these powers and authority, we've never really done a good job at this. At the state level, we kind of did it because the federal government forced us to do that, and we're going to actually get into the Enabling Acts coming up. And I'm not going to go through a lot of Enabling Acts. I'm just basically going to go through the issues of the Enabling Acts, you know, of how it started off this way and it migrated into, you know, a free-for-all for Congress to basically assume every power that they wanted and inflict every negatory, or I should say inflict all sorts of unconstitutional punishments upon the states when they didn't have that authority to do that. So and I'm going to look over my shoulder, and yeah, I've got 20 seconds. So I know I don't have a lot of time, but I'm hoping this starts to make sense in how we actually start going through these things that are in the Constitution that everybody just scratches their head. And we've allowed jurists and we've allowed lawmakers to tell us what these things mean. It needs to come back to us at the county level in conventions to where we actually sit down with our best and brightest at the county level. You know, yours truly might be sucked into his own county, but I need you to be prepared to do this in your county as well. These days are coming because if we succeed, which I'm praying we do, then we have some work to do. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point
where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.